Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. All right, welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg.
And this is Carl Carlson. Hey, Fred, we were just chatting in one of our podcasts about the whole Texas debacle and the electric grid and really the deferred maintenance subject, or not putting enough resource and attention on maintenance when it isn't present in your current environment. And I had been teaching online, of course, FMEAs, and recently had conversations with people about the difference between FMEAs that are done as part of product development, which you could call a design FMEA or even a process FMEA, mm-hmm. and the type of FMEA that's done in support of maintenance, which can be called a maintenance FMEA or part of the reliability center maintenance process. Mm-hmm. And that just came to mind with me on how important it is for us to not get into our silos. And you can spend an entire career in maintenance and not really understand the product development side, or you could spend an entire career in product development, not really understand the maintenance side, and yet the same tool, FMEA, straddles and transcends that. So I just opened my mind a little bit when we were talking about the electric grid and the consequences of deferred maintenance and how it can be characterized on the subject of FMEA.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, I've been part of a couple of FMEAs that are in the maintenance world, and it was really a focus at asset prioritization. You know, where are those big single point failures that we really take the plant down or cause damage to lots of other things? You know, in a silicon wafer fab type situation, you really don't want to have anything that goes over current and smokes. Now you've lost all of the clean room system. You lose hundreds of millions of dollars in assets and product and stuff like that. So I've been involved with a couple of them that way, where it was, we need to maintain our products, but it almost always immediately went back to the design. We need to make sure that our fail-safe systems and redundancy systems and maintenance practices and everything else, like in a fab, don't contaminate the place or cause these really severe problems.
It does go back to design in one aspect, which is, of course, design for maintainability, mm-hmm. Design for service, design for supportability. But then it doesn't go back in other aspects. And so let me just talk for a couple of minutes on the difference. When and again, in conversations with people that are in the silos, it's just an interesting conversation because some people in one silo haven't really looked at it from the other yeah. silo point of view. Yeah. But in a design FMEA, we're looking for causes that are root causes that are potential design deficiencies. And those causes can then be fixed. And those causes include statements about the failure mechanism, the underlying physics and chemistry and electrical that brings about the failure. And so that is a deep dive into root causes through the FMEA procedure and then developing recommendations to reduce the risk to an acceptable level of the design. And separate from that is a maintenance type of FMEA, which is done on often in the RCM process on what's called maintenance significant items. So it narrows down certain portions of the equipment. And then it uses the same kind of procedure, although the definitions are a little bit different on what they call functional failure and causes are different, because the maintenance FME does not take it to root cause of the equipment. It takes it to a maintenance actionable level of cause. So the level of detail on supportability and maintenance of FMEA is very different. And the outcome on recommendations are not to improve the design. They're to improve the maintenance, like either conditions-based maintenance or preventive maintenance. And those then become the outcome. And of course, there's other differences like the logic diagrams on the effect side of it. So, but the underlying principles are similar.
It's probably why I got involved with the FMEAs, because I had this philosophy, it's always the designer's fault. So the maintenance managers like that idea.
Exactly. You get a lot of finger pointing. They called it, back in the GM world, they called that the GM salute.
Oh, okay. Point the finger out.
Who's at fault, or who's at somewhere fault away from you?
Well, you know, the ones I was involved in were the major pieces of equipment being brought into a line. And the organization had learned that if you don't think about the maintenance practices as this equipment comes in, as we commission the equipment or to be designed and customized for the plant, it's too late once it shows up. Then we just have to deal with it. And it affects downtime and maintenance costs and everything else. So the FMEAs were done from a maintenance point of view, but with the focus on, we still have an opportunity to change the design. And so I thought that was brilliant. But I see what you're saying is that at some points you got a line that's already there. It's this aging line. Where do we prioritize? How do we make sure we keep it running? Where do we spend our dollars? That makes perfect sense.
Yeah. And on the former one that you talked about, where you're looking at the maintainability, you can define functions in a design FMEA mm-hmm. that relate to maintainability or serviceability. And those then, the little mini FMEAs get done, and you improve the design so it's more serviceable. You can also do the same thing on manufacturing and assembly. Mm-hmm. So you improve the design so it's more assemblable.
Right.
But then separate from that is we want to take a look at what are the common failure modes of the equipment, and then the causes become maintenance actionable. So let me give you an example.
Okay.
If we're doing a large equipment that has a pump, when we get to the cause of a problem, we don't necessarily have to go inside the impeller blade and see what the reason why it fatigue failed. When we're doing maintenance FMEA, we're only looking at to the point of we have to swap out the pump or whatever that maintenance actionable level is. That becomes as deep as you need to go. That used to bother me. I'd say,
I would feel a whole lot, and maybe it's just because I'm so much steeped in the design side of stuff, but it's, if you're going to go in and look at a pump that failed, I would have to go to the next level of, because if I'm out there every 6 weeks replacing this, you know, $100,000 pump, there's something wrong here, guys. Is it our maintenance practices? Are we just not putting the right seal in this thing? Or are we getting the alignment wrong? Or are we undersizing the motor? Or, you know, what are we doing wrong here? At some point, it's got to elevate to, we got to deal with it. And then the FMEA is a great place to step back and think about, well, what do we know and don't know? And yeah, we can go replace that pump, but is that the right thing to do?
Well, yeah. And okay, so then that's where this is a nice topic, because if I'm doing a DFMEA and I'm getting input from the assembly people that they just can't make...
It's a blind connect. Yeah, it's a blind connection here, guys. That's kind of silly.
So then we can do something on the design, but sometimes a DFMEA can recommend actions to the PFMEA, mm-hmm. and that's appropriate. Right. So there's nothing wrong if you're doing an equipment FMEA to send a note off to the pump designers saying, you know, if you would just make this change, we think we wouldn't have as many problems. But that's not in the core of the procedure.
No,
and that's the key, is the maintenance FMEA is focused on the maintenance operations. And very often that pump is off the shelf and you don't really have an opportunity to make design changes.
Well, yeah, I get that. I think it has some utility, but it's at some point you got to look at, is this cavitation that's causing these things, impellers to fail, or is it leakage, or is it, you know, because I think it, the way you described it, and I'm probably not getting the full concept of it, is, I mean, I would be happy if the FMEA helped me know that, you know, while we take this pump out, let's also take a look at preventative maintenance on the motor and the alignment and make sure it's anchored severe correctly. We have the right grade of seals in there. We tighten the bolts in the right order. I mean, it's part of, it's, yeah, we can go to a maintenance activity, but it, what are the key, the critical to quality of that maintenance activity that need to be there in order for this to be effective?
Oh, let me pose it a different way, and I'll pose this to you, Fred, just for fun. So I did a project a number of years ago on submarine, where submarines are, these are submarines that are in operation. Mm-hmm. And the topic that we had is we were determining the proper maintenance procedure for the blowers, the HVAC blowers. Mm-hmm. Now, HVAC blowers are really important on a submarine.
Imagine that.
Yeah. So you're out there on mission or whatever you're doing, and you have a problem with the blower. It's a big problem. And so we were basically, the whole idea of the maintenance FMEA and the RCM project was to determine what the process should be. Do you run to failure, or do you maintain a certain protocol when the submarine's back in port? Mm-hmm. Or do you, what is the exact protocol, the optimum protocol? And of course, the answer is it depends. Depends right. on how the blower fails, what the failure rate is, what the over the mission time.
Yeah, type of and use, the environment.
Yeah, the environment, exactly. Are you going to send people trying to crawl through the HVAC system to replace, and what does that entail, mm-hmm. versus swapping out equipment in port that might be in good shape, might mm-hmm. not be ready to fail, but you don't want to take any chances. All those are trade-offs that are part of the RCM process, mm-hmm. where you go through the logic, what basically it's an effect type logic of the consequence of failure,
right?
And then you get different categories of preventive maintenance that you can do, or if you get into conditions-based maintenance. So that is a very good process, but never gets into the design of the blower.
Okay, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, that, yeah. I guess I'm just too deep into the, it's always the designer's fault.
Yeah. So what was interesting to me there when we were talking about the ERCOT and the Texas problem in the electric grid is how people can be focused on some equipment and not do the required preventive maintenance. And that just opened my mind a little bit when I was listening to people talk about design FMEA, and then a whole another group of people talking about maintenance FMEA, mm-hmm. and they've never talked to each other. And one colleague who's trying to get us together to say, well, can we use the design FMEA as the basis for the maintenance FMEA? And maybe the answer is yes.
Oh, yeah. And you see that. You've seen design FMEAs or system FMEAs as an input into maintenance sparing, because it gives them an idea of like, oh, these are the ones that are at risk to fail and have high severity. We might need an extra motor, mixture.
Exactly.
It's not the only input, but it's a piece of it.
There's a lot of opportunity there.
Yeah, and I see it done well and most often not so well in those realms. But it's I feel the way you describe the FMEA for maintenance is that it optimizes that silo. And it's appropriate. I think many organizations, like my electrical grid here, if we have a power outage, the priority is get the power back on, right? Mm-hmm. It's roll the trucks and let's get it fixed. And it's the same as the operations manager in a plant. Why is my plant down? Fix it. They really don't. I mean, unless they're enlightened, in my opinion, they really aren't going to give you the extra hour to do the root cause analysis and sort out why did this happen? How do I prevent it? In the electrical grid, we've got a lot of old equipment and it's dispersed all over the place, right? Everywhere. And if the maintenance activity says, oh, we need to replace these couplings that connect the lines to the pole, there's a million plus of those probably just in my county, right?
Yeah.
Is that the right, even though we know that these are wearing out and this is a problem, I have other higher priorities just keeping the long transmission lines running or the power plant running or all these other priorities versus just this one.
The type of decisions that you're talking about in the grid those same type of decisions occur, of course, on oil fields and gas fields and wind turbine and wind farms and all of that. Of course, the wind farms are newer, but there's maintenance that has to be done on an ongoing basis. And that type of operational reliability, operational modeling, and even the FMEAs that support it are different than product development, where you're developing a wind turbine from scratch or a new program, or you're developing oil and gas equipment. And these somehow, I think it's useful for our reliability professionals to understand both sides of that equation so that they can, like you say, if you're finding and discovering from your operational FMEAs that you're having a lot of short-term life problems, the information's got to go back to somebody. They can do something about it.
Yeah, well, it's an FMA is a good tool for it. And I think inviting a design side person, it just provides another view. Even if they're just a bystander, they can learn a lot about what is the maintenance challenges within the program. I think I keep going back to the design, obviously, but the idea of if my priorities are to get the system up and running after a failure or to prevent those failures from occurring from our maintenance activities, then it's natural. We can't do it all. Well, what do we focus on? What are the things that are going to make a difference? And
how would you bring that design person in when it's a supply chain?
I know I've done that. I was in a factory. It was actually in Paris, Texas. I never knew the place existed. Of course, then Mike Silverman, he was lining me up with this project, and he said, "Hey, Fred, you want to go to Paris for a project?"
Oh,
He didn't mention the Texas part until a lot later. It's like a 3-hour drive from Dallas, and that was the closest airport. It was like, oh my God.
Geez.
And it was wonderful people, and they really got their act together. They said, "We're going to do this FMEA. We're bringing in this new equipment, but we want to improve the changeover time. And what can we do to avoid all of the once we change over from one size bottle to another size bottle, we often spend 2 or 3 weeks running this and tweaking it, maintaining it, and adjusting it. Our maintenance techs are out there almost full time the first couple of days. But how can we get to the changeover so we don't need to do all that maintenance activity and adjustments?" So they had a pretty narrow focus, but they had the key pieces of equipment, the bottleneck part of the process line. They had the design team from that equipment there. They had the maintenance team there. They had the operators there. They brought me in as an outside observer to, spot anything from coming from outside their plant and their facility. They violated the keep it to 8 to 10 people kind of thing. We had about 15, and sometimes there were 20 people in there, and it was very well facilitated. Not me doing it. They really focused it in and kept the discussion going, but it was really aimed at. Once they got to the prioritization, the action item part took the bulk of the discussion. What is the right way to solve this problem? And what are our options? What do we need to go sort out and figure out? But it was, and you've said it many times, Carl, about FMEAs. You have to have the right people in the room. And sometimes that involves somebody that knows the design and the constraints from the technology of the design. That's there, and then the constraints and technology of the maintenance practices, it's there, and then somebody from finance is saying, "Hey, don't forget, we still need to be profitable on occasion."
Yeah, right.
That kind of thing.
Trade-offs. And you make good points for it, and I agree with that. The one caveat I want to mention to listeners on the maintenance FMEA side is that since you're in operation, you might have data, which is fantastic. In other words, hopefully you have real good data. Sometimes people try to get the data from handbooks. In other words, how often will this pump fail? Rather than if you don't have the actual data that supports it, and then people can go to handbooks. And I just want to keep this in front of people that be aware of the source of handbook failure rates, because sometimes the assumptions that go into those are not the best.
Yeah. Or it's, I saw one who was pumps, and what do you mean by pumps? And it went everything from a little itty bitty micrometer dosage type pump up to something that was a 12 inch diameter, you know, filling a sewer line, kind of moving that kind of, and everything. And it was like 15 different kinds of technologies, completely different environments. And if it moved a liquid from here to there, it was a pump as far as that database was concerned. And like,
yeah. Well, so you got to be really careful about the source of information. And like you're saying, Fred, are you applying it right to the right categories and things? Yeah. And this also comes into electronics, because you have all types of handbooks on electronic failure rates that are filled with little hooks in them.
Yeah, I'd say just say no to as much as you possibly can. It's if you got absolutely nothing else, your engineering judgment is probably going to be better than the handbooks. And then when you get an engineering handbook source of data, put an asterisk on it, or engineering judgment only, put an asterisk on it. And those become priorities to get better information, to get the data.
Yeah, excellent point. Excellent point. I totally agree with that. You carry the source of information in the analysis so that it can then be improved as you get better information, and that can become part of your task is to get better information.
That's right.
But if you don't do that, then you think it's
all equal. Yeah. And I find that by doing that early in if it's the source of the frequency column is we're using a database for some of the things, other things we have good data on is, if the database data, you know, is not high severity, it doesn't show up in the top 100, top 10 list type thing. Well, if we have time and can collect the data, it'd be great to do, because someday we're going to need it. But if it's not what we need to make decisions on fixing what is the highest priority right now, let's not worry about it and move on.
And great point. And be aware, as listeners, be aware, and I preach this all the time on the FMEA side, be aware that high severity, low frequency problems can be very severe, can be very high risk. And so you get those black swan events, example, something doesn't happen but once 100 years or whatever, can be very severe. But if you only go by the frequency, you're not going to do anything about it. You won't do the preventive maintenance to address it. And so that's why I don't go by RPN as the sole means of risk prioritization. I always start with high severity.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah. If you're a listener and have some thoughts about the maintenance FMEA versus design FMEA and how these two worlds interact, I'd love to hear from you, because we have some new standards that we're working on internationally where we're trying to bring together the applications. And be very interested in what people are thinking and saying.
Yeah, and you can get in touch with Carl and the rest of the hosts of the Speaking of Reliability podcast at AscendoReliability.com/go/SOR. And there's a contact form there where you can join the conversation. Carl, like the other hosts on the show, are available on LinkedIn and on our about pages at the site. Many ways you can get in touch with us, and certainly do love hearing from you. It is one, it helps us understand that we do have people listening. Take a couple extra minutes and let us know what your questions are, contributions to our body of knowledge, and we'll go from there.
And it may show up as a future podcast.
Oh, definitely. We like talking about that stuff. Listener stuff. So cool. Thanks, Carl.
Thanks, Fred.
Talk to you soon. Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation if you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show. Please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.